You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, July 1st, 2013. My name is Matt Binder.
I am Michael Brooks, and this is the award-winning
The Majority
Report.
We are broadcasting to you live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building.
In the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City.
We have quite a show for
Quite a show today, folks. Max Blumenthal on who is behind the smear campaign targeted at Glenn Greenwald and Edward Snowden.
And anyone who wants to help Edward Snowden.
And anybody who may or may not want to help him. New revelations from Edward Snowden. We're spying just as aggressively against our allies, the Europeans, as strategic rivals China and Russia. Wendy Davis still fighting hard in Texas. What else do we got
Rick
today?
Perry still an ass.
What?
Rick Perry still an ass.
Rick Perry still an ass. Many people are still asses. Things we will not get to today but want to acknowledge. Tragedy, 19 firefighters died in Arizona fighting wildfires there. I think that's the largest single amount of firefighters who've died in the course of duty since September 11th, so
yes.
That's a very sad
and
thing.
And this was like the elite firefighting team for these wildfires, and
yeah.
I think there was 20 of them, and 19 of them are now.
So we just wanted to acknowledge that, incredibly sad, died fighting against the wildfire.
Saving
really
people
sad.
In their homes?
Saving people's homes. Want to honor what they did and acknowledge the loss. Gay marriage going ahead in California.
Yeah, on Friday evening, gays and lesbian couples were allowed to marry in California. And those people who hate the gays tried to stop it again by saying how it was too soon and tried to put an injunction on it, which Justice Kennedy said, I'm not taking this, no.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. Justice Kennedy, who is actually pretty terrible in many ways, he's great on this, and you just shouldn't try it with him.
In news that is related to Wendy Davis, the Ohio's governor signed their abortion restriction bill into law last night. There's a photo of him signing the bill, John Kasich, and he's surrounded by all old white men.
That's right. And this is what it's really about. There's definitely, as we all know, a war on women, a war on reproductive health, and a war really on the very building block of equality and opportunity that we're fighting for and that we value. And I think more and more people are waking up to that. As you know, Cliff and Sam said on Friday, on the other hand, what's terrible is this war continues to be waged. Also, really quickly, in Egypt, massive demonstrations going on. There's 17 million people on the street. Several cabinet ministers have resigned from the Morsi government. Opposition activists actually burned down the headquarters of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the party in control in Egypt right now. Unfortunately, some activists are calling for the military to depose Morsi. There's a lot more to get into that. I don't think we're going to do that today. Events are playing out there, though, and that continues and is very alive.
It's good to see that, there was a big, big protest there that started this revolution that
yep.
ousted the former leader, and then they got a new leader who many think is actually worse than the old one. And
in some respects, he definitely is.
And
yeah.
instead of just sitting on their hands and saying, we did what we could and this is the cards we're dealt with now, they're back out in even bigger numbers. Like, that's amazing.
And I think these protest movements, which you're seeing across the globe, obviously in vastly different situations, whether it's in Israel over, you know, rising social inequality, or in Egypt, or in Turkey, or in Europe, or even Occupy, as different and radically different as they all are, there's certain commonalities, and that includes, I think, just a lot less patience for the failures of politicians and a lot less trust that institutions will carry through on what they're supposed to do after a movement like that. So that's definitely happening in Egypt. People have died, including actually one a student from Kenyon College who was studying abroad there. So obviously a ton going on, but we need to take a break, get to Max Blumenthal, and we'll be back in just a moment, folks, and you'll find out who is behind the smear campaign against Glenn Greenwald and Ed Snowden.
We are back on the Majority Report.
Joining us now is Max Blumenthal. He's a journalist and author of Republican Gomorrah, which is an absolutely essential book for understanding the modern Republican Party. And he's talking with us about his new piece in Alternet, Exposing the Dark Forces Behind the Snowden Smears. How you doing, Max?
I'm good. I'm good. Good to be back with you.
It's great to have you on. So, you know, over the past couple of days, obviously there's been a couple of articles, one in the New York Daily News, the other in BuzzFeed, which were, you know, just sort of essentially, you know, at best gossipy, at worst sort of hit pieces on Glenn Greenwald. They seemed to follow a very similar pattern. And I'm wondering, your article kind of contextualizes that, and you have some ideas as to what might be behind those pieces. And I'm wondering if you could kind of explain the main takeaways of your piece.
I should clarify that while I do kind of put those articles in context as kind of coordinated opposition research dumps, what I focus on is a piece that appeared a day before those two articles did in BuzzFeed, which was another separate opposition dump designed to support this emerging narrative of Edward Snowden, the whistleblower, the source of Greenwald, on the PRISM program as a hypocrite who is on a global hypocrisy tour, in the words of Kurt Eichenwald in Vanity Fair. And, what this article relied on, ironically, were documents leaked from inside Ecuador's government, apparently by some opposition source, classified documents showing that the Ecuadorian government had attempted to procure spy equipment from two Israeli firms through a U.S. middleman, or surveillance equipment, for about $500,000. But there was no evidence in this article by Rosie Gray, which was, you know, marketed as this big exclusive. There is no evidence that the surveillance equipment had ever been used. And I thought, this is funny. You know, where did they get these documents from? I knew, you know, I'm pretty well aware of the, you know, situation in Washington, that there are, that there's a whole network of think tanks and lobbyists who are incredibly opposed to the government of Rafael Correa, mm-hmm. Who is the sort of left-wing populist president of Ecuador, and they're attempting to, they would love to see him disappear in a coup, as the leftist president of Honduras did, and as they attempted to do to Hugo Chavez. He's already faced one coup, and they've been clamoring for the U.S. to cancel all trade deals with him, this network of right-wing lobbyists and think tanks, since Correa gave sanctuary at the Ecuadorian embassy in London to Julian Assange. They've been using Assange against him. So they've stepped, when it appeared that he was going to extend asylum to Snowden, who's stuck in Moscow, I'm not sure if he's going to do it now, this group really started amplifying their calls for sanctions on Ecuador. And I thought, this story is really funny. Who planted this story? And I started, you know, and I know that BuzzFeed is a PR laundromat, and that Rosie Gray and Ben Smith, the BuzzFeed editor-in-chief, are happy to do the bidding of neocons, so, and you allow them to turn their website into a platform for these kind of attacks. So I just started, you know, looking into it, and I found some pretty remarkable things.
Yeah, so let's get into the more of the kind of specific discussion and critique of BuzzFeed, but I'm interested in this kind of devil's brew that you kind of put together of lobbyists and exiled people connected to aristocracy in the far right in Latin America, and former kind of senior Bush administration officials who, you know, this is their business, essentially, pushing for right policies, right-leaning policies in Latin America. And they've been agitating, as you say, against all of these Latin governments for the past several years, regardless of, you know, even before the emergence of Assange in this type of situation. So could you give us some details onto who these people are specifically, and what information they relayed to BuzzFeed?
Yeah, I really started studying this network back in 2004 when I did a piece for Salon.com about the coup that the coup in Haiti, mm-hmm. that forced Jean-Bertrand d'Aristide from power, and I was able to really trace the coup through these sort of paragovernmental groups that were NGOs, but they were really doing the work CIA used to do in Latin America, especially in Central America, from the 1960s to the 1980s, covertly, and they would do it overtly. They would basically work elections and prop up opposition figures and encourage them to take action against leaders the U.S. didn't like. I'm referring to the National Endowment for Democracy, the International Republican Institute, and the National Democratic Institute, and I traced, you know, this plot against Aristide all the way to Roger Noriega, who was then George W. Bush's assistant secretary for Western Hemisphere, and Otto Reich, who also held that position. He was Bush's Latin American handler. And Reich is a sort of an interesting character. I don't know how he managed to get through Senate confirmation. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy who possibly helped a Cuban terrorist named Orlando Bosch get out of Venezuela after bringing down a commercial aircraft and confessing to bringing down a commercial aircraft that contained, for example, the North Korean Olympic team. It was a Cuban flight, and he did so as as an act of terror against the Castro regime. And Orlando Bosch now has a day named after him in Miami because possibly of the intervention of Otto Reich. Otto Reich was also involved in helping the Contras generate propaganda inside the U.S. He was singled out by the U.S. Comptroller General for having engaged in prohibited covert propaganda activities. Right. And where does Otto Reich fit into this story? Otto Reich is currently a lobbyist in Washington that's kind of what you do after you go into government, I guess. And he's working with someone named Ezequiel Vasquez Gurr, who is an Argentinian economist. That's kind of his right-hand man at this lobbying firm. And they oversee accounts like Lockheed Martin, ExxonMobil, and Bacardi. Bacardi is, of course, the Cuban exile family that wrote the Helms-Burton Act in 1996 that embargoed everything on the government of Cuba, including essential medications and prescription drugs. These guys are trying to get these companies back into places like Ecuador, where major industries have been nationalized and economies have been restructured under a populist socialist model. These corporations hate Rafael Correa. They hate Hugo Chavez. They hate the Bolivian government. And so there's an ulterior agenda here. And to complement their lobbying operation, what Vasquez Gurr and Otto Reich have done is they just churn out op-eds constantly for major publications, including Foreign Policy and the Miami Herald, demonizing people like Rafael Correa, who, you know, has not always been the most democratic leader. He's passed some really draconian laws cracking down on the media in his country and exploiting these laws to call for disaster. So they're stating their opposition under the guise of human rights, when we know it's about, corporate control and neoliberalism.
Right. So I just want to think that's...
In the past year, they've really ramped up their campaign on Correa because he gave asylum to Assange. And so it's these two lobbyists that I'm talking about who kind of pioneered this narrative that Correa should be punished for sheltering Assange, and they've now kind of tried to amplify it because of the rumors that he was going to give sanctuary to Snowden.
Yeah, no, and I just wanted to sort of – I think that's an important point to reiterate, that it's not that the some of the issues raised about the human rights record of Correa or any of these other leaders for that matter aren't legitimate. It's just that they're being cynically used as handmaidens to push an ulterior agenda by these lobbyists that you've talked about.
Interestingly enough, that BuzzFeed, the documents BuzzFeed got on Ecuador's own spying that they say Ecuador does, those documents were taken down by those websites that they uploaded them to, like Scribd and under the DMCA, and BuzzFeed is taking that and turning that into a big story now, where they're trying to push like, ooh, look, Ecuador sent some shady PR firm to take these documents down. And it's just interesting to see like how they're able to turn that into a story to attack too. It's like they're just really giving into these groups that fed them these stories to begin with in hopes of really painting Ecuador and Correa in a bad light.
Yeah, I noticed that. And the documents they're claiming that CENAN, which is Ecuador's intelligence service, forced Scribd to remove the documents. I've seen really no evidence of that. I think it's remarkable, by the way, that the people who are out to get Snowden are so overjoyed and that there are these leaked documents out there from another government, and they're using these leaked documents to support their cause. I mean, what I wrote is that apparently their problem isn't leaking on principle. Their problem is which government the leaks embarrass. Let me get back to those documents by talking about another interesting figure who's involved in this story. I went to Ezequiel Vasquez Gurr, Otto Reich's lobbying partner's Twitter account, and I noticed that like 25 minutes after this story appeared, he was promoting it heavily in Spanish. He was personally thanking BuzzFeed editor-in-chief Ben Smith for, quote, unmasking Correa's hypocrisy. So, I mean, it's just like, when I find out about a story, I usually don't find out about it 20 minutes after it appeared. It seems like he had been tipped or he knew it was coming somehow. And then I noticed that a really shadowy character named Alec Boyd, who I'd come across in a previous investigation I did about right-wing activist who sort of markets himself as this human rights hero named Thor Halvorsen, who runs the Human Rights Foundation and the Oslo Freedom Forum.
You know, when I was reading your piece and that name Thor Halvorsen came up, I just automatically remembered how just out of the blue, like last month, BuzzFeed was pushing this piece called like, is this the face of a new global human rights movement?
Right.
And it was all about this Thor guy. And I've never heard of him before, to be honest with you. And I just thought it was interesting that they were just pushing this piece like it was this big story that everyone should know about it. And this is the name you should know. It was just amazing to me to also like when I was reading your piece for that name to come up, and it just all was like full circle to me. I'm sorry for interrupting, but I just wanted to point that out.
No, I'm glad you intervened with that because that's important. And that was by Rosie Gray, who's also the author of this Ecuador piece. And she was flown out to the Oslo Freedom Forum along with mostly like neocon and liberal interventionist type journalists. I don't know who flew her out or whether she accepted resources from Halvorsen to do this story, but there seemed to have been some kind of quid pro quo there because, you know, BuzzFeed readers would not ordinarily care about him. And used to provide sympathetic coverage and support his public relations operation. Let me just kind of bring it back to this story and not waste too much time on Halvorsen, although your listeners should really read my piece at Electronic Intifada about him and the Oslo Freedom Forum.
We'll put a link up to that on the site.
Okay, great.
Yeah, go ahead.
And so he formerly employed this character, Alec Boyd, who's a London representative of the Venezuelan opposition, someone who has used his website to call for the assassination and torture of Venezuelan officials. He's called for their dead bodies to be thrown over the slums of Caracas. And he said he wished he could do to them what Genghis Khan did.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who pretends to be a human rights activist. He, on his own website, shops himself as an opposition researcher or a hit artist. He says Alec can be contracted to do due diligence on individuals and companies in Venezuela and Latin America. And I noticed that he actually had the story. He had the documents that BuzzFeed claimed were theirs exclusively. He had them first on his website and more. He was in intimate contact with whoever BuzzFeed source was. And it's possible that he could have been the source himself. And then I noticed that he tweeted at Rosie Gray. And he said, good work on your Snowden post. Evidently, Ecuadorian source leaked same info to you guys. Seems I jumped the gun before you. So this indicated
bizarre,
that.
That's
bizarre,
really
yeah.
bizarre, yeah.
This is obviously showing that they either shared the source or that he was creating kind of plausible deniability for himself if he was the source. And he's since released more documents. Those documents have not been taken down. I think he's used Scrib to put those documents up. So I don't know what the hell BuzzFeed is talking about, that they're like, you know, under attack by these repressive governments. I don't know if he's ever met Rosie Gray, but they are both connected through Thor Halvorsen. Boyd used to work for the Oslo Freedom Forum. And sorry, for the Human Rights Foundation, which Halvorsen founded. And Rosie Gray went out to Oslo this year to provide Halvorsen with positive PR. And by the way, Thor Halvorsen's first cousin is one of the key leaders of the Venezuelan opposition and was involved in the coup against Hugo Chavez in 2002. So all these characters are part of this right-wing Latin American opposition cabal that's looking to take down all these socialist governments. And then you have a reporter like Rosie Gray, who's basically a PR agent for neocons and corporate lobbyists. And, you know, her response to my article was, I love your passion, quoting Eli Lake. So not much of a response. And I think it's pretty obvious what went on here, even though we don't exactly know who the source is. We haven't conclusively identified them. We can tell what's going on with this article and how a group of right-wing Latin American lobbyists, Bush administration figures, and shadowy right-wing international operatives are exploiting the Snowden saga and the drama surrounding Snowden to target Rafael Correa and his government.
Yeah, I think that this is
legitimately elected government.
Yeah, legitimately elected twice, I believe.
He has about 65% popularity, and you know, for all of the repressive measures he's enacted, the elections were judged to be free and fair.
Well, yeah, and I think that this is the kind of crucial point to highlight, because obviously China and Russia, of course, have terrible records when it comes to human rights, freedom of speech, and everything else. And that's been used against Snowden, even though obviously he's in an incredibly precarious and vulnerable position, particularly right now being stranded at a Moscow airport. But so much of the attention being focused on Ecuador, which despite its problems and can be a place of legitimate criticism, clearly has the best record by far of those three places. And yet most of the effort that we've seen from a communications and PR perspective has been targeted at Ecuador. That obviously highlights and reflects what you're saying. Now, that said, President Correa seems like he's sort of stepped back from what appeared to be several days ago, like a relatively high likelihood that Ecuador would offer Snowden asylum. And Correa's done a couple of interesting things over the past couple of days. He simultaneously unilaterally canceled preferential trade status with the United States, which is what the sort of big economic carrot that the U.S. was holding over Ecuador. So he did that. And then at the same time, he has at least rhetorically walked back and the notion of giving Snowden asylum and said that it's going to be a long process and he's not sure about it. And he appreciated his phone call with Vice President Biden. So how do you kind of read the signals that Correa is sending now?
I am not really an expert on the internal politics in Ecuador or South American relations with the U.S. It's pretty clear that
do you think that that
the X factor here is Julian Assange, and that Assange has attempted to manage Snowden, and there may be a power struggle between Correa and Assange, and there are also technicalities about how to get Snowden out of Moscow. Correa had arranged for a temporary travel document, but it's really difficult to get him through without a passport. And the U.S. has revoked his passport, and I don't know what Assange has tried to do, but there have been reports of a kind of power struggle between the two.
Do you know if these those Ecuadorian leaked documents had any real effect on Ecuador's decision on Snowden? And also, do you know if those documents had any effect on what Ecuadorians think about Correa?
I doubt that this story had much of an effect in Ecuador, although the Interior Minister, Jose Serrano, was asked to answer for them at a press conference. And he issued a pretty defensive response, but he said that Ecuador doesn't conduct mass spying on its citizens, and that that if it does surveillance, it's used. It's kind of the response the U.S. used, but BuzzFeed had sold this story as kind of an expose about a program that was on the same level as the NSA in the U.S. And yet they've been forced to admit that this equipment described in the documents may have never been used by Ecuador's intelligence services.
So it really would be the distinction between if it was leaked that the NSA and the U.S. intelligence apparatus was considering PRISM versus actually implementing something, and yet this was sort of leveled as being equally
I did a report from Mondo Weiss on some of the equipment that the NSA was using to monitor American calls, like at AT&T, how they were routing the fiber optics transmissions to NSA listening centers, and they were using Israeli equipment. They were using a machine called the Naris Insight, and this is one of the most advanced pieces of surveillance equipment. And I don't see any evidence that the equipment described by BuzzFeed can do anything like the Naris Insight and you know, that something that costs $500,000 could be used.
Right, right. That's a very small
a
sum
scale.
For this. Yeah, yeah. Right.
I mean, what Correa is doing is much more crude, which is using criminal libel law against people who are publicly opposed to him, and I think that's bad enough. He doesn't really need to conduct spying to crack down on his opponents. And you know, in South American politics, I mean, we saw it, how the opposition media was used in Venezuela. This is a zero-sum game. These opponents and right-wing antagonists are not using democratic means themselves.
That's right.
They are openly calling for a coup. I remember there was an attempt after 9/11 in the Venezuelan opposition media, a sustained attempt that went on for years to link Chavez to Al-Qaeda. The opposition media in Ecuador is trying desperately to link Ecuador to Iran
and Hezbollah.
So it's not. I mean, it's like Fox News on steroids, and then, or it's like just Fox News all the time, and then you have Otto Reich. I mean, Otto Reich is singled out for engaging in covert propaganda activities on behalf of the Contras, and he's lecturing a government on the democratic use of the media and on free speech and the free press. It's a joke.
Yeah, and I think it's a guy. Yeah, and Otto Reich, I mean, to be really clear, I mean, this is someone who he was given a really hard time by people like former Senator Chris Dodd. You know, it was very universally understood that this guy was an incredibly toxic and noxious force in Latin America, as well as the United States. And that cannot be kind of, reaffirmed enough. I want to get back in the final part of our talk to BuzzFeed. And what's interesting, you know, I don't know, Ben Smith wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago actually defending Snowden as a source and criticizing journalists sort of piling on him. And even the Greenwald profile they published was a much more – it was more subtle than the New York Daily News piece.
So
that's the kind of interesting space that BuzzFeed occupies, because you probably – I'm certain if you asked, you know – I think Rosie Gray has actually been on this show before, or on Ring of Fire, maybe. I don't know. She's been interviewed by Sam before on some good sort of, you know, liberal investigative journalism against the Koch brothers or somebody like that. So what do you think? Do you think that there's – my sense from you is that you think there's a really specific danger in BuzzFeed's receptivity to all of this kind of covert PR material, precisely because they actually do – some, you know, leaving aside all the entertainment, obviously, but they do some good journalism. They do have a kind of liberal reputation, and yet they're a conduit for the types of forces you're talking about.
Yeah, that's an important point. I don't know about Ben Smith. I mean, I've had some suspicions about him, but I don't really see Rosie Gray necessarily as a hardcore ideologue. And as I said before, BuzzFeed is sort of a PR laundromat. Basically, what these reporters want, they're access journalists. They're everything that Michael Hastings was not. They're the opposite of Michael Hastings. And I thought it was kind of ironic that Ben Smith wound up eulogizing him.
And that he worked there was interesting.
So they're access journalists. They want access. And a good way to get access in D.C. is to maintain connections with lobbyists, who are always, you know, shopping stories on behalf of their clients, who are often foreign governments, and who and maintain ties with people who are operatives, who are powerful people. And Ben Smith is incredibly networked in with the neocons in Washington. He's accepted lobbying favors on behalf of the government of Georgia. I mean, I've seen that on DOJ FARA documents, along with people like Eli Lake, and he's written some really pathetic defenses of himself. This is through the firm called Orion Strategies, run by Michael Goldfarb, who is a hard right-wing Likudnik neocon lobbyist who also runs the Free Beacon, which is a right-wing magazine, and advises the Emergency Committee for Israel, this front group that was attacking Chuck Hagel as a terrorist loving, mollycoddling anti-Semite. And so at the same time, while Ben Smith had accepted favors from this lobbying group and gone out to dinner, you know, dinner sponsored by the Republic of Georgia, and you know, possibly run stories that the government of Georgia fed him, he's promoted Emergency Committee for Israel propaganda by covering it, you know, under the guise of journalism. I'm not saying that he was doing it because he necessarily agreed with it. It's just you have a constant, steady stream of stories that are pushing you, that are pushing your career forward, and people are reading them, and they seem to be relevant. I don't know why anyone would give publicity to a group like the Emergency Committee for Israel. But when you're an access journalist, it's really a question of who can ply you, who can supply you with the most stories. And usually, it's the most aggressive PR operation in D.C. with the most corporate money. ECI is funded by Adelson. They have a ton of money, and they can do that kind of thing. And so they rely on people like Ben Smith and Rosie Gray. And here we have another example of that. Some people just came to them and said, we got documents for you. If you'll defend this story, we'll give you these leaked documents, this exclusive. It's an incredible story about Ecuador. And if you're an access journalist, you're amoral, and you probably don't really have a very strong beliefs one way or another. And so that lets you be plied by the right wing. I can tell you that since my story came out, other journalists have told me that they receive emails almost every week, if not every day, from a Republican operative I'd never heard of before on Ecuador, and that this Republican operative has an account with some Ecuadorian opposition group and is bombarding journalists every week, feeding them with stories. And you don't see that happening from the other side. So this is really a case of access journalism, and it's a case of, you know, access journalism gone wrong and everything that Michael Hastings was not.
Right, right. And it's not, you know, there was this, that controversy that erupted over that blogger whose name I'm completely escaped me right now, but who was taking the right wing blogger who was taking money from the Malaysian government to smear opposition figures.
Josh Trevino.
Oh, yeah. And this is not, you know, and everybody recognized. I mean, I remember I did some TV hit on that. That was universally recognized as being completely, you know, ethically dubious at best, disgusting, wrong,
well,
bad practice.
Because he got,
and also because it just wasn't as subtle as these other arrangements are. And I think that that's why these arrangements are probably even more problematic.
There's also
that's
no,
what this piece points to.
There's also no one we're trying to, that America wants trying to apply for asylum in Croatia, and they're using it
in Malaysia. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Let me just say something about that.
Yeah, please.
I've been following this pretty closely, and you know, Trevino, he's just like one of the worst things I've ever encountered through the internet in my life. It's like worse than like a snuff film that you accidentally come across when he tweets at you. It's like you've just been slimed for the day. I'm not going to ask
you a follow up about accidentally coming across snuff films, but go ahead.
And so I wasn't really, you know, shedding any tears when this story came out. But first of all, I think this was a story by Rosie Gray and BuzzFeed that was marketed as an exclusive. It was not an exclusive. Malaysian opposition bloggers had revealed his lobbying well before the story. I had alerted The Guardian when they gave him a column that he was lobbying on behalf of the Malaysian government, and they dumped him for that instead of for his call for the Israeli army to assassinate American, you know, old hippies on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla. But what she did on Twitter, and so, you know, I just looked into why is BuzzFeed running this Trevino story now? Why were they attacking him for Malaysian lobbying? And I'd seen some evidence or suggestion that Thor Halvorsen was pushing this story because he's involved with the Malaysian opposition, whereas Trevino had the government account.
Hmm.
It was obvious that this was another PR dump, probably by the Malaysian opposition. And who are they going to go to? Rosie Gray and BuzzFeed and Ben Smith, because they're just access journalists who want stories, and it's just so much easier for them to, it's great for them to actually hit a right-wing operative like Josh Trevino for once. It gives them, makes them look balanced. And Trevino is someone who's earned so many enemies. It's not like anyone's gonna.
Yeah, one's shedding a tear over Josh Trevino. Maybe. And I just have to say before we sign off, later I'm gonna very briefly talk about Jennifer Lopez performing for the Turkmenistan dictator. And in one of the pieces that somebody sent me about this, a human rights activist who's quoted as condemning, Jennifer Lopez for doing this. Is Thor Halvorsen. So he's definitely on the move. Max, this is a great piece. We have it linked to on our website. Thanks, man. Thanks for talking.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, great. Talk to you soon. So
that was really interesting stuff.
It's really, I think
I did not realize the connection and it between, Thor Halvorsen, I can't say that name.
Thor Halvorsen.
Halvorsen.
Yeah.
BuzzFeed, Rosie Gray, that group, these opposition groups in the Latin America countries. It's just,
it's tricky because I think that, obviously if he's speaking out in Turkmenistan and other regions, he's doing some good work. And it's that's why I like talking with Nicholas Koslov, who we had on last week about Latin America, because he is one of the only analysts out there who's able to actually write about these governments in the region in a full picture way, because they do have some real problems. But the truth of the matter is that as soon as you get to Latin America from a U.S. perspective, it just brings out the absolute worst. And it's amazing. As soon as Ecuador comes up, you just know that this just – funnel of darkness is going to take over that entire story.
When does American media outlets ever cover Ecuador to begin with, in terms of the general consensus of what's going on over there? General, never.
I mean, you're not going to see. And another thing too that's really important to note about these countries. So I'll say this with Venezuela: there's no question that Hugo Chavez didn't have a sustainable financial strategy and that he was, overspending based off of an oil bubble. That's true. And there's a lot of cronyism and a lot of all the rest. But every time you read a piece about Venezuela, it would say, this guy's on a spending spree. Well, the reality is that the Gulf states are on a spending spree. Anybody else is on a spending spree. The difference was that instead of an oil spending spree for stadiums, for sports stadiums and more housing complexes for the ruling elite of countries, he went on a spending spree that did involve schools, healthcare clinics, and other absolutely essential things. So even these guys, who have real flaws and real problems and legitimate opposition, but the context of why they're popular and their genuine accomplishments are never. I mean, by the same token, Roosevelt did a lot of terrible things when he was president, like the Japanese internment. But we remember him as the guy who laid the ground of modern America and was a tremendous success. And some of these guys, I don't think Chavez, but some of these guys possibly, and maybe even Chavez in some respects, they'll be remembered domestically in similar ways if they can pull off what they're attempting to pull off. And the narrative we have about them is nonsense. I'm not saying to be romantic about them or overly supportive.
Oh, of course, yes.
But the narrative we have about them utter garbage.
Because in this country, we have a real habit in this country of having to see things black and white.
That's right.
There's no gray area in this country. You're either a good guy or a bad guy. And that's how Hugo Chavez was always, presented to the American public by the media. He's some bad guy.
Right.
I mean, it's just absurd. And I mean, on the whole thing of the human rights side of things, the fact that we're supposed to be up in arms that Edward Snowden wants to go to Ecuador, and Ecuador has is not the greatest on human rights. We're the greatest. I mean, tell the hunger strikers at Guantanamo Bay that Ecuador is terrible with human rights. Let's see what they have to say about it.
I mean, there's no question that the United States, following through on its rhetoric and some of our history and traditions on human rights, would be the most potent anecdote to all of this. And you know, that doesn't seem
even past that, people in America always, you know, want this country to be held up to a higher standard because it's apparently better than the other countries. And to compare, like, well, Ecuador does this. Why is he running to Ecuador? They're no better. China does this. They're no better. But that's not the point.
Well, China and Russia are much worse. I think the thing that is difficult with Snowden, and I'm going to get really briefly to the latest disclosures that came out over the weekend. What's difficult with Snowden is, again, I've said this before, the NSA leaks are 100% important. They've sparked an incredibly vital conversation about massive overreach in surveillance. And then, you know, he went to China. He went to Hong Kong, which actually it's funny. There's demonstrations in Hong Kong starting up because of the sort of repression that they're experiencing as they've moved back under the umbrella of China. And then he released other things like U.S. spies on China and Russia, which, you know, shocking. What is, you know, that's – I don't have a problem with that, and that's not a surprise. And then the hacking stuff, which, again, I think is different. And I think what happened was, frankly, is that he found himself in this unbelievably precarious and dangerous position, and he has to play somewhat to his host countries. And that's a perfectly understandable decision to make from the position he's in. And now I think, unfortunately, you know, whoever advised him to go to Russia was giving him really bad advice because
he just applied for asylum in Russia.
Well, we'll see how that plays out. But I do, I mean, there's no question that if you go from a PR and communications perspective, if he ends up in Russia, the Russian government obviously has no interest in using whatever information he has or might provide as a way to advance human rights in an open society. And that's going to be game over in most communication in the United States, because you can't come to a place that's deeply flawed like America, leak this stuff, and then go to a place where, you know, punk singers are thrown in prison and journalists are killed and gay people are arrested and beaten on the street. That's going to be very hard for him. Again, it's totally personally understandable, but I want to actually get to – this is a good transition.
You know what, though? I don't – really quick. I don't really – I mean, yeah. I get it. I agree somewhat. But I mean, where does people – where do people expect him to go?
That's a completely fair point.
There is no perfect country. There's – and like the ones that are closest to being, you know, the good on human rights, I mean, they're all – They would extradite him in a second to the United States. I mean, he's got no real options.
But the reality is, the hard reality is that if you stay in Russia, your message of being a transparency human rights advocate is done from a communications point of view.
I still think it's possible to get across. I mean, I understand the hurdle, but I think it's possible to get across as, you know, you care about this stuff because it's your country doing it.
That's not compelling. I mean, the thing to me is that now the other question for me is just this is a game of survival for him. And part of the reason is that is because he's been charged with espionage, which proves his point almost as much as his leaks, if not more so. I mean, that charging him with that is ludicrous. And then when you look at the treatment Bradley Manning received, the obscene conditions he was held in, and the fact that this kid, essentially a young man, is like, I need to survive. And even if that includes being exploited by the Russian government and killing the PR message because he's in Russia, that in and of itself is a very compelling statement about how out of control this apparatus has become in the United States. So... and it's not a personal judgment on him.
I understand the threat he's under.
That's what I was talking from. It's not a personal – but again, it's just a cold analysis of how that's going to play out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if some defecting to Russia is not – again, it can't bear that enough. So let's get to the new revelations. So over the weekend – I think this is different, in fact. I don't think spying on China and Russia are particularly controversial, although there's a lot of specifics of that. But the depth of the spying that it's emerged, that we've been engaging with the European Union, is kind of stunning. New leaks, which this was actually first reported in Der Spiegel, which is the leading German weekly. Basically, the new claims are that the United States has bugged EU offices in the United States, accessed internal computer networks of Germany, which is, of course, the United States' largest trading partner, steady ally of the United States. And it also outlines spying at the UN, which is a violation of a different type of protocol against Europe, as well as spying that targeted EU headquarters in Brussels. It's incredibly extensive spying, and the same type of aggressiveness that you would see that we saw targeted at China and Russia, which are strategic competitors, not close allies. And let's play some do we have that sound of the president of the European Parliament, Martin Schulz, responded to these allegations on a trip. I think he was in Croatia, I believe. Do we have that sound?
Yes, we do. Here
All
we
right,
go.
Let's play that sound.
If it is true, it is a shock. And I'm angry, not only angry, I'm deeply shocked because I think the United States should treat the European Union not like an enemy.
Yes, and that makes absolute sense to me.
It's coming out that they were monitoring, Germany.
They were monitoring Germany particularly closely.
As if they were China. Like, it was the same type of monitoring.
Well, it's the same aggressiveness. And in fact, and Germany's justice minister has said, if media reports are true, it is reminiscent of the actions of enemies during the Cold War. It's beyond imagination that our friends in the U.S. view Europeans as the enemy. And in response, actually, Michael Hayden, former director of the NSA and CIA, basically said Europeans should examine their own spying record before getting so self-righteous. But you know, the thing is that even if that's true, there are two takeaways from that.
But you did it first.
It's not even that. It's like this is the danger of the narrative, I think, as I see it. Because I think that what the administration sees and people like Hayden see is they're getting the hypocrisy charge. So, and that's, if you look at a lot of commentators, like Chris Hayes has done a tremendous work on this, and obviously Sam, but a lot of commentators have pointed out leaks are treated differently, depending on who's leaking what. And when you saw last week that General Cartwright was getting blamed for leaking the Stuxnet story, I think that that might be the next response of kind of official Washington, is to plug the hypocrisy gap, not the issues that they point to. So I think that that quote's very revealing. The other big thing that might possibly come out of this is that Europeans are saying that this might detonate the European and American Free Trade Agreement, which is being negotiated, which, of course, we've been really critical of on this show. But that throws that whole agreement into jeopardy. Now, following this, and I think this is really interesting because, again, we've talked about the dangers and the negative repercussions of Snowden being in Russia. The leader of Germany's opposition Green Party, and I want to be really clear, the German Green Party, just really quickly, this is not like the American Green Party. They've served in government. They're the third largest party in Germany. They have incredibly popular leaders. They have many members of parliament. So the German Greens are a legitimate and strong party. The leader of Germany's opposition Green Party suggested just today, I believe. Was this on Monday? I think this is on Monday.
Yes.
That Europe should provide safe haven for Edward Snowden. Jürgen Tritton, I believe his name is, who is the he's a candidate for chancellor of the next elections, and he is the head of the Germany's Greens, said that, quote, Edward Snowden should not be seeking asylum in, quote, despotic countries. And then he went on to say, it's painful for Democrats that someone, and he means Democrats in terms of, people in democracies, that someone who has served democracy and, in our view, uncovered massive violations of basic rights should have to seek refuge with despots who have problems with basic human rights themselves, he said. Someone like that, he went on, someone like that should be protected. and that counts for Edward Snowden. He should get safe haven here in Europe because he has done us a service by revealing the massive attack on European citizens and companies, and Germany, as part of Europe, could do that. So basically, I wouldn't bank on that, obviously, but I think that the European Union disclosures and the fact that there is some aspect of a strong, genuine center-left in Europe adds another calculus to the conversation. And obviously, it's not going to happen. But if he got asylum in a place like Germany, that would be pretty striking. But those new revelations mean a lot, because that goes back to the culture of this massive invasiveness and overreach, which is happening domestically, and then it's happening with our closest allies.
I honestly think that these stories about it happening to the spying being done to our closest allies could mean more actually than the domestic spying, because I think that's when something will get done. Because domestically, the American public just don't care enough, sadly. And the majority of the American public don't care enough.
You know how you get the American public to care? You say, what if in 10 years this whole apparatus is a law passed for the IRS to track your unpaid taxes? Then they care.
Yeah,
that's one example of many ways these things could be used.
But I mean, like,
no, but I agree with you.
This reaction is going to be a big deal.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't do this
right
to people who you say are your allies and expect things to be fine. There's talking internally, you know, about possibly sanctions on Ecuador, punishing them for harboring Edward Snowden. But I mean, how can you expect relations between you and these allies you call allies be the same? How are you not going to expect something there to fall off too?
I think there's no doubt that spying goes on between allies, but the level of this aggressiveness, I think, has to be shocking for the Europeans. And I think you're right. It could have some serious fallout. I think you're completely right. Folks, we've got to move to the better half of the show. We've got more Wendy Davis.
Let me tell you, this better half is one that you crack open a cold one for.
You crack open a cold one for. You lean back for a half hour of progressive news and analysis with some laughs thrown in, folks. So on the better half, what do we have?
We have some serious stories, like someone from someone at a Bank of America is facing 13 years in prison. The only problem is it's not someone who works there. It's a guy who put chalk writings outside of Bank of America. He's the one facing 13 years in prison.
Unbelievable.
We also have an amazing story about a 4th of July parade in Colorado has been canceled.
Why?
What sort of un-American?
What kind of communist Occupy Wall Street schmucks would do that?
A Tea Party group.
Ah.
We also have Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett is still an a-hole.
Massive. He's the worst. Jennifer Lopez.
Michael's got this great Jennifer Lopez.
She just sang a happy birthday to one of the world's worst dictators in Turkmenistan. But apparently, you know, she had no idea. She had no clue that this guy.
If only there was some easy method of researching and discovering information.
I know.
I mean, if only there was some sort of screen that just sat in front of you when you were, like, you know, in an office space. And, like, there was, like, this apparatus connected to the screen.
And to your phone and to everything else.
Where
in your
you could,
life,
like, type.
You could type. And the first results would reveal multiple reports of torture, killings, disappearances, one-party rule. And the guy also just being an a-hole himself.
But if that device existed, I mean, you also would have to spell Turkmenistan somewhat correctly.
Yeah, maybe that's what she did. She was like, the publicists were just like, E-I-G.
That's probably the
Don't find anything. Let's go.
That's probably like some crazy Muslim name from Turkey. That's probably what that is.
Yeah, Turkey's not that bad, right? Turkmenistan's what they mean by Turkey in the Middle East. That's awesome. Wendy Davis hitting back hard on Rick Perry, keeping up her incredible fight. And your phone calls and your IMs, you can be you can join the show 646
257-3920.
646-257-3920. I'm going to open up the IMs in a second. And also, please, folks, listen to what you got from Max today. You got this whole – it wasn't just – it was almost like if you weren't so disgusted by it, it would be like a riveting spy novel.
And before we go to the better half?
Yes.
Happy Canada Day to all of our Canadian listeners.
Oh, yeah, including one particular listener who I'm sure is very happy to hear that. Okay. Please, you can become a member. Go to the website.
Oh, Canada.
Oh, Canada.
Say, baby, put down that pipe what? And get my pipe up.
All right. Time for the better half, folks.
Yeah.
Take care.